welcome. You are tuned in to another edition of Mountain Song and Story right here on Radio Bristol. I'm your host, Tony Doman, and here on the program each and every week, I find and feature a theme relating to Appalachian culture, and then I play songs and feature stories all about that topic of choice. I also love to invite guests on the show on a regular basis to talk about all of the interesting and exciting things they are doing in and around the region. And today, my guest is Damian Matthews. He is a local author who focuses on writing Appalachian fiction. Damian will be joining me today to kickstart the spooky Halloween season, which we will be celebrating right here all month long this October on Mountain Song and Story. Today, we'll be talking about regional folklore, Damian's work as an Appalachian author, and so much more. I'm so excited about today's conversation, and I know that you will be too. Also coming up later this month, I'll be featuring a whole bunch of different ghostly, spooky, scary, and sweet Halloween stories from a variety of different people to celebrate Halloween here on the program. So please come on back and check out all of the other great programs that I've got lined up for you this October. I'm so glad you're joining me today for the show. First up, let's get things started with some spooky tunes. Here is Tommy Collins with Black Cat.
Well, a black cat crossed my path. I turned around when I saw that. Then I threw away my good felt hat. Then I walked on down the road. I took a stroll down by the sea, hoping no more cats to see. Then I heard a meow right behind me, so I took steps on another road. Black cat, black cat, black cats all around me. I went over to the dog pound. I didn't think I'd see any cats around, but I saw two black ones lying on the ground, so I found another way to go. I sat down neath the live oak tree. I saw a little girl, she was lonely. She had a black cat, but it didn't scare me, 'cause I liked her right well right off. Black cat, black cat, black cats all around me. And talked a little bit. I sure was lucky, I made a big hit. I smiled at the kitty and petted it, 'cause a black cat never hurt me. Well, to make a long story short and sweet, you can't blame a cat for crossing the street. It even seemed like they helped me to meet the pretty little lonely girl. Black cat, black cat, they're not unlucky to me. We're gonna have two or three.
All right, kicking things off for our first October program here on Mountain Song and Story. We got Tommy Collins with Black Cat. We are going to be playing all kinds of Halloween songs all month long here on the program. And we're also going to be featuring a whole bunch of ghostly, spooky stories for all of these shows here all month long. I am so excited. It is the best time of year. I look forward to this time of year all year round. This time of the year, everyone is interested and excited about scary stories, and folklore has so much to offer. So it is so excited to see so many people be excited about Halloween and ghostly, spooky things. So, once again, we are talking to my guest, Damian Matthews, here on today's program, all about his work as an Appalachian author. And we're also going to dive into some really interesting folklore here on today's conversation. So I'm going to go ahead and play one more song, and then we're going to dive into that conversation.
You must be daddy's little pumpkin, I can tell by the way you roll. You must be daddy's little pumpkin, I can tell by the way you roll. Well, it's 11:15 and you're sleeping on the bedroom floor. I can see the fire burning, burning right behind your eyes. I can see the fire burning, baby, burning right behind your eyes. You must have swallowed a candle or some other kind of surprise. I'm going down to Memphis, got $300 in cash. Yeah, I'm going down to Memphis, got $300 in cash. All the women in Memphis gonna see how long my money could last. Downtown, going to rattle somebody's cage. Yeah, I'm going downtown, I'm gonna rattle somebody's cage. I'm gonna beat on my guitar and strut all around the stage. If you see my baby coming, don't you tell her that her daddy's in jail. If you see my baby coming, don't tell her that her daddy's in jail. She'd sell her little pumpkin just to raise her sweet daddy's bail. You must be daddy's little pumpkin, I can tell by the way you roll. You must be daddy's little pumpkin, I can tell by the way you roll. Well, you never do nothing to save your doggone soul.
Okay, folks, so joining me now is my guest for today's program, Damian Matthews. Damian is an author from Tazewell, Virginia, specializing in paranormal and mysterious genres in his work. He independently published his first print collection, Tales of the Mysterious and the Macabre, Stories from the Appalachian Foothills. In 2019, his Appalachian werewolf novel, Moonlight, in 2020, and his much-awaited and beloved Appalachian vampire novel, Mavrip, in 2021. He also currently teaches English. So, Damian, welcome to Mountain Song and Story. It is so great to have you here on today's program.
Yeah, thank you very much. I'm happy to be on. I love all of our Appalachian culture, and being able to share that with you all is just going to be awesome.
Yeah, and we're in the middle of the best time of year, October, fall, spooky season. It is such a great time of the year, especially if you are here in the Appalachian region. So let's start by telling our listeners how you got started in writing. Part of your bio also mentions that you're proud of your Appalachian culture, and you often emphasize elements of that culture within your writing. So tell us how your work as an author got started.
Sure. Well, I've always been a reader. Since I could hold a book, I would read anything that would sit still long enough for me to read it. Eventually, I kind of started to write sequels to books that didn't have sequels. Movies that I thought needed a sequel, I would kind of try to write those out. And then the year of my junior year of high school, actually, I got my first original novel idea and just went crazy. And that novel is actually, it's still in progress, but the second novel that I ever had the idea for is Mavrip, and I just released it last year.
Yeah. So, you know, also part of your bio mentions that you seek out mountain lore and legends as much as you can. And that's like personal enjoyment, and you really and tie that into your writing. So what are some of your favorite local or regional stories, and how, and a bigger question, how did you kind of discover this like regional folklore that you tie into some of your work?
So I don't know why, but I've always been fascinated by horror and folklore. Some of my earliest memories of traveling a lot in the mountains involved being in the backseat of the car and my mom and my grandma in the front telling me to look out the window and watch out for Bigfoot, probably to tell me to shut up because I was talking too much, but you know, it worked. So it helped build that love. And I've lived in several different Appalachian towns, from Tazewell to Wise, Norton. Now I'm in Cleveland in Russell County, and all of these areas have their own different versions of our monsters, and we hear the ghost stories and the legends and the family tales, and it's always just something that's made me happy. So I've just kind of sought that out anywhere that I could, especially in my writing.
Yeah. So what are some of your favorite like local tales? And I know we're also going to feature some of your Halloween stories as part of some of these episodes here during this time of year on this show. But yeah, what are some of your favorite, like, those regional things? I mean, there's so many. Like, I know it's hard to pick just one or a few.
There are tons. But my favorite, one of my tops, is always going to be anything to do with Bigfoot. So I gravitate a lot towards Norton, Virginia, and the Wood Booger. I had an undergrad teacher who was so cool in an Appalachian class that I had. She let me do an entire report on Wood Booger sightings over like the last 30 years or whatever. So I always kind of try to write stories involving those things. The Devil's Looking Glass out of Irwin, Tennessee. I've been there a few times. I've kind of tried to see the face in the mountain, and you can see it. It's a little unsettling. So I've written a couple pieces about that, Wampus Cat, local hauntings, any kind of plantation hauntings, all these things just kind of work together in my brain to make me happy.
Yeah. And the Devil's, I know about the Wampus Cat, but what's I don't know about the Devil's Looking Glass. Like what is that story?
So the Devil's Looking Glass, it's on the Nullichucky River, a couple miles outside town limits of Irwin. And it is just like a sheer cliff face that overlooks the river. And there are a lot of stories about what is there or what might be there. But essentially, in the right moonlight, it looks like there's a face, like the face of a demon or a devil looking at you from that mountain. Natives used to believe if they canoed too close to the cliff that a demon would jump out and jump into their canoe and either turn them over or just kill them. And there are a lot of fun, spooky associations with that particular place.
Oh, yeah. That's a great one. I hadn't heard of that one. And I might know of the Wampus Cat, but some of our listeners might not. And since you mentioned it, now you have to tell us about it.
Sure, yeah. And I'm totally not playing these stories up because they're in an upcoming short story collection. But the Wampus Cat is, it was originally a Native American legend, and our Native American ancestors really loved writing stories or telling stories about humans that shapeshifted or were somehow mutated to be part animal. And the Wampus Cat, according to various legends, is a half woman, half cougar creature that prowled the mountains. And people used to say, whenever you heard a mountain lion roar or screech, that it was actually the Wampus Cat. It wasn't a mountain lion at all. So because they do sound so much like a woman in distress, it just kind of it built on that legend.
Okay, yeah. I know about the Wampus Cat from that show that was, I think, I don't know if it was on the History Channel or something, but like Mountain Monsters or those
Yeah.
guys. Yeah. So that one always stuck with me because it was always, I don't know, like Wampus is just a good, fun word. Anyway.
I love now that we have like anybody that has just a big fat house cat who says, "Oh, there's my Wampus Cat."
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. So some of your writing, we just mentioned some of the recent publications that you have, but tell us a little bit about your process in writing. So, a lot of these folk tales that are regional, it seems like that's a great way that you can kind of pull some information from, but or at least pull some, I guess, influences from. So what's kind of your process in writing, kind of taking, how do you analyze, I guess, regional folklore, and how does that translate into fictional writing?
Yeah, so I'll talk about the short story collection I mentioned a few minutes ago. So I've taken several of these local legends, the Wampus Cat, the Wood Booger, the Brown Mountain Lights, Devil's Looking Glass, Mothman, and I've looked at different stories, throughout the decades or centuries of their telling, and I've just kind of pictured in my own head what one of those encounters might look like. So I try to have a little bit of backstory, like a little paragraph of information about each legend before the story starts. And then within the story, I just kind of use all of the information that I have about the legend and turn it into something that may or may not be what an encounter could to turn into.
Gotcha. Yeah. Well, I love any kind of collection of short stories because they're so digestible, they're easy to read, obviously they're great for this time of year, but they're great for any person who's just interested in local legends and interested in learning about what's, legends from their region. So I really value what you're doing. I think it's great. But I am also wondering, where do some of your resources come from when you're looking up these legends? Because as far as like analyzing local legends and getting information about them, storytelling is passed down through generations orally in so many cases, and legends, they could be 10 years old, they could be 1 year old, they could be hundreds of years old, and different versions of stories are still alive today. But where do you kind of find some of your resources when you're looking into some of these local lore and local legends?
Yeah, so well, I have a history or a background rather in journalism, so I can kind of go there to the quote unquote official sources. And I also have a background in library work, so I can go back to those official sources. So I guess I'm kind of cheating in a way on that side, but I'll also like to just go and talk to just the people in these areas, especially when I have events. I've had countless people come up to me and tell me, I've heard this story in my neck of the woods. And it's good to collect those bits and pieces because every single small town in this region is just rich with those bits of folklore, whether it's, the story of a granny witch who lived down the road who could cure your hammer toe or anything like that. It's just the cool stuff that we have that's part of our culture. So I like to go back and look at anything I can. Actually, while doing research for that Bigfoot paper I told you about in college, I learned that Daniel Boone actually claimed to have killed a 10-foot tall, hairy creature that he called a Yahoo in the mountains of Kentucky, just up the road from Norton. So it's just,
Whoa.
I never knew that. I think I was 27 before I realized that.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Yeah, man. And going back to the wood booger, the wood booger is different than Bigfoot, or it's just the Appalachian Bigfoot, correct?
So the origin of that is really cool too, and I'll tell you that little story. So when settlers first came to the Norton, Virginia area around the High Knob and Dota region, the wood booger was like their boogeyman. They would tell their kids, you know, don't get out of bed after dark or the wood booger will get you. And then eventually hunters and travelers started telling stories of this big humanoid ape creature, and the two legends just merged, because now there was something that was quote unquote factual to tell these kids, you know, hey, this guy saw the wood booger the other day. Don't go into the woods. He's going to get you. So.
Walking in the sunshine, sang a little sunshine song. Put a smile upon your face as if there's nothing wrong. Think about a good time had a long time ago. Think about forgetting about your worries and your woes. Walking in the sunshine, sang a little sunshine song. La 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 la. Pasture, a green and grassy field, walking in the sunshine, sang a little sunshine song. Put a smile upon your face as if there's nothing wrong. Think about a good time had a long time ago. Think about forgetting about your worries and your woes. Walking in the sunshine, sang a little sunshine song. A snowy pasture, a green and grassy field. Walking in the sunshine, sang a little sunshine song. Put a smile upon your face as if there's nothing wrong. Think about a good time had a long time ago. Think about forgetting about your worries and your woes. Walking in the sunshine, sing a sunshine song. Walking in the sunshine, singing a sunshine song. Put a smile upon your face as if there's nothing wrong.
Walking in the Sunshine there by Roger Miller. If you are just tuning in, you are listening to Mountain Song and Story right here on Radio Bristol. I'm your host, Tony Doman, and we are speaking with my guest, Damian Matthews, as part of today's program. We're talking all about his work as an Appalachian author, focusing on mysterious, mystery-style novels and writing, and so much more. We also had to play Walking in the Sunshine because we were just talking before the break a little bit about Bigfoot, and I'm just picturing Bigfoot just walking in the sunshine, singing a little sunshine tune. That's what I had in my mind. That was my Bigfoot song for today. So we're going to go ahead and get back on into my conversation with Damian. I'm going to just like throw some folklore at you and then you can describe it because I like this vibe right now.
Yeah, sure.
So you also just mentioned about the granny witches and everything you're talking about I've featured here on this program throughout the years. But
oh, wow.
Yeah, or just like bits and pieces of it. But yeah, like tell our listeners what is a granny witch? I did a program on them a while back, but Now that you mentioned it, yeah, you got to tell us.
Oh, perfect. So, see, I'm loving this. So a granny witch is basically any elderly lady who is like an herbist or even honestly a folklorist, you know, even in popular culture like Beverly Hillbillies, you know, Granny Clampett had her rheumatism medicine. And it's really anybody who can make those herbs and those poultices and can use the natural world around us. Almost, I might get shot for saying it this way, but it's almost Wiccan in its origin, because we just had to learn from the natives and whoever could teach us which of the plants and the flora and fauna in this region were helpful and which ones were harmful. So a granny witch was the person in your neck of the woods who could, like I said, cure a hammer toe or fix the poultice to keep gangrene from setting in on a wound, but they could also give you just the wrong kind of potion and, you know, you'd be running to the outhouse for a few days.
Oh, man. So we just talked about some of your short stories. Tell us a little bit about some of your favorites while we're doing it this way. I like this. Your favorite stories.
So we're talking about my stories that I've written or just in general in the region?
I would say both. Yeah. Let's start with general in the region and then some of the ones that you've written. Yeah.
Okay, good deal. So some of my favorites just in the Appalachian region as a whole, I am just as like I'm obsessed with Bigfoot and the wood booger. I'm absolutely obsessed with the Jersey Devil. I go crazy for the Jersey Devil. And people will argue that it's not quite the Appalachian region. It is. It's the upper tip top. But a little closer to home, we have the Beast of Grafton, the Flatwoods Monster, the Wampus Cat, Brown Mountain Lights, Devil's Tramping Ground in North Carolina. I could go on and on and on.
Yeah. We'll just have to get people to get that book then.
Exactly, yeah. And that was, I'm thinking I'm going to have too many stories to put it into one collection, or it's never going to end, so it might have to be a couple.
That's good. And then going on to some of the stories that you've written, talk a little bit about some of your favorites there.
Sure. So the ones that I've written, one of my favorites actually was in my first collection that came out, The Tales of the Mysterious and the Macabre. And it's called Lefty Smith and the Right-Handed Corn. So what I did with that story is I was actually, I was teaching a workshop on folding local folklore into Appalachian fiction. And that example just kind of popped into my head about what if there was this guy who in his travels stumbled upon a county fair. And at that county fair, people were only eating corn with their left hand. And this guy comes along and he's like, oh, that's silly. I'm right-handed. I'm going to eat my right-handed corn. And the people just kind of started freaking out and saying, hey, man, like, what's going on? You're going to invoke the curse. And he's kind of skeptical. And they're like, yeah, you know, they tell him this ghost story about a Civil War vet who comes home and he's only got his right hand, like his right arm is the only one he has left. And he's just meaner than a striped snake. And keeps telling people to, you know, leave off his right-handed this or that. And eventually, once he passes, people see his ghost in the cornfields. And they're preparing for the big corn harvest, and they always have a festival. So he tells people, don't y'all eat my right-handed corn. And ever since, nobody's in the town has eaten corn with their right hand until this traveler comes in and messes up their curse, you know?
Oh, man. I love that. That's great. Yeah.
I really enjoyed writing that one. I love presenting that one too. It's so fun to read that and hear people just kind of laugh when it finally comes out what's going on.
It reminds me of, like, I don't know, Stephen King in a way, just because cornfields are always somewhere in a spooky setting. So I like that a lot.
I appreciate that, and that comparison makes my little heart happy too.
Yeah.
But yeah, some of the others that I really enjoy writing, I actually have a story I've wanted to find a way to properly write about the fey folk or the good folk for years. And it finally hit me over summer. I was driving through Sevierville and I saw just a sign for this little old diner just out of the way, you know, miles away from a town. And this idea started turning in my head about this group of fey folk who own the diner and they run it and they depending on how nice or bad the customers are, they may or may not do some mischievous things to them while they're there. So that story will be in the upcoming collection too, and it's called Starlight Diner, and it's just, oh, it was so much fun to write it.
As we sat on the front porch of that old gray house where I was born and raised, we stared out at the dusty fields where Daddy always worked hard every day. I think it kinda hurt him when I said, Daddy, there's a lot that I don't know. Don't you ever dream about a life where corn don't grow. He just sat there silent, staring at his favorite coffee cup. I saw a storm of mixed emotion in his eyes when he looked up. He said, son, I know at your age, it feels like this whole world is turning slow. And you think you'll find the answer to it all where corn don't grow. Hard times are real, there's dusty fields no matter where you go. You may change your mind, 'cause the weeds are high where corn don't grow. I remember feeling guilty when Daddy turned and walked back in the house. I was only 17 back then, but it seems like I knew more than I do now. I can't say he didn't tell me this city life's a hard road to hoe. It's funny how a dream can turn around where corn don't grow. Hard times are real, there's dusty fields no matter where you go. You may change your mind, 'cause the weeds are high where corn don't grow. You may change your mind, 'cause the weeds are high where corn don't grow.
So you also just mentioned about some workshops. So you also teach writing workshops. So talk a little bit about what kind of workshops you teach and that kind of process.
Sure. So my workshops, I have covered several different topics from Appalachian fiction to horror. And we actually moved our mystery class to next year. We're doing another horror workshop the first Thursday in October, and that one's going to be super fun. We're going to try to focus on kind of, I think right now I'm going to go more on creature horror. The last horror workshop I did, we covered the full gamut of everything that could be scary, but I kind of want to make it a little extra spooky for October. So that one is the first Thursday in October, and then in November we have Appalachian Folklore. And in December, we have poetry, and those are all the first Thursday of the month, unless there's a delay. But soon we'll probably be working on next semester's schedule, and hopefully we'll have plenty of people involved. If I can plug the website, that's just sw.edu/livin'insouthwestvirginia, and every word after the slash has a dash between it.
Yeah, and what are some of the things that you do, and like, what if I was to take a workshop or a class on this, what are some of the How do you get people interested in it so they keep coming back or really get something out of it?
Yeah, so a lot of what I do, I kind of set out at the beginning, depending on what our topic is, I'll ask everybody, you know, what do you think the definition of this topic would be? What does it mean to you? We have a couple of writing exercises to kick us off, and then we go into a deep discussion on how to build these stories. I talk a lot about unreliable narrators and the different parts of those particular genres and what makes them popular and how to keep away from the bad tropes and embrace the good ones. And really, it's usually at least 3 to 4 writing exercises within, and we will share, anybody that is comfortable within the workshop will share what we've written and kind of bounce ideas off of each other. And I've actually got 3 or 4 regular people who come back for about every single workshop. So we've had several different people who've come in and out for various ones. And then I've got my crew who come about every month. So
yeah, well, that's wonderful. And they are open to anyone, correct?
Yes. Yeah. If you go to that website I mentioned, you can register. It is $10 a person. If you're a student, especially, we can look into scholarship options. If you are having any trouble with that, you can just kind of show up that day and tell us you want to join, because sometimes the website can be a little iffy. It kind of bounces. But if you can't get registered ahead of time or don't want to, you can show up the day of. They're always beginning at 5 p.m. at the Government Center. And you just tell us who you are and what you want to do, and we'll point you in the right direction.
So one thing that I do here on this program on a weekly basis is really highlight regional Appalachian culture, whether that's through storytelling or through inviting guests like you here on the program to talk about interesting things that they're doing. But my question for you is, how does folklore and these Appalachian stories tie into the greater Appalachian culture, and why is it so important to get people interested in learning about these stories, and how can they, you know, keep them alive in a certain way? And I know it's easy to get interested in like the Halloween stories and the folklore that way, because this time of year, everyone is seeking it out. But throughout the rest of the year, yeah, like why do you feel that it's important that what you're doing is making an impact here in the region?
So I love that question, first of all. but yeah, so one of the things that I really kind of embrace about it is like we talked about earlier, this region is such a melting pot of culture, and people from all over the world settled here. We don't necessarily always think about that. We think about, you know, the Scotch-Irish, sometimes we think about the English and the Native Americans, but we had Italians, we had Germans, we had, basically, if they were able to travel across the sea, they would settle here. They would either settle or travel through here. And of course, anytime there's a big group traveling through, there are going to be a few stragglers that stay behind, whether that is humans or the stories they tell. So getting to embrace that culture and keep those stories alive not only helps connect us to the history that built this region, it helps the future to remember, you know, hey, this is a story that has existed for X amount of decades or centuries. Maybe I should go back and research the beginning. And I've actually had several of my students, because I, like I said, I'm a teacher too, and a lot of my students who have read bits and pieces of my work or heard me talk about the folklore have gone back to look and saying, well, you know, my great-grandfather's heard of this, or my mom heard my dad tell his brother all about this. And just it kind of helps you connect in a more wholesome way, I guess, than just saying, hey, I'm here in the mountains and I've always been here in the mountains. Now you can say, my family brought these stories over when they migrated centuries ago.
And it's so exciting also to find the origins of some of those stories that you may have heard. I always love that, you know, if like, well, a lot of the things I feature on this program, of course, is music related, but like a song like Knoxville Girl, a murder ballad, has origins. It's way older than it being recorded in the 50s or 60s. You know, like songs have origins that were probably just stories hundreds of years ago that were passed down. And so this is all one and the same here. So yeah, if you've got a story that was brought over generations ago and it's just being retold for today's audiences. It's all very interesting, and it all ties together. Yeah, so.
Yeah, and like one of the things that always reminds me of culture is looking at the song Barbara Allen and the multitude of times it's been recorded, and it was just a folk ballad. You know, it was just something people sang around the campfire, literally. And now it's this huge thing, and all of these stories kind of tie in that way too. There have been, you know, different artists who have heard these stories, and even if we look back at the cave paintings, especially around the Richlands, Virginia region, those paintings, they have thunderbirds in those paintings and these huge creatures, and it all kind of coalesces to create a, well, for lack of a better term, a melting pot again of culture and nature and kind of why we should embrace where we are and what this region can offer.
And now that you've mentioned that, I don't know about those cave paintings, so you have to tell us.
Okay, so you're going to put me on the spot because I can't remember all of it, but there's a mountain near, and it's actually near Southwest Virginia Community College. It's kind of close to the Tazewell-Russell County line, but there's just a mountain called Paint Lick Mountain, and they actually found several Indian paintings or Native American paintings in the caves up there. And have you been on campus at Southwest?
My mother-in-law actually works there, so I've driven past it a million times, but I've not been in there.
Okay. Well, see if your mother-in-law has photos, or we'll get you photos of the mosaic that's in there. They actually had a mason come in and do a mosaic of the Paint Lick Mountain cave paintings. And I think that is in, I want to say Dellinger Hall, but I might be wrong. But just see if she'll show you those or run up there and just go in and look at those. They are pretty near exact replicas of what was found in the caves. And I know the land is privately owned now, but I think they still run tours up there so you can see the paintings. But I'm not sure who discovered them or when, but I've known about it for, I guess, most of my life. And they found some paintings, and to my knowledge, those are the most intact native art that I've ever heard of in this region.
Wow, I really had no idea about that. I'm not originally from the area, so I'm always excited to, I'm from West Virginia originally, so I'm really always excited to learn about new things, especially, that's really interesting, so I will have to look into that. But Damien, we are running about out of time, but before we go, a couple quick questions. One, do you have any advice for anyone who's pursuing an interest, whether that be a professional interest or a hobby in Appalachian writing, especially like the type of writing that you do, more paranormal, spooky, I would say. Do you have any advice for someone who is pursuing this? And what would you tell them?
Sure. Yeah. My biggest piece of advice would never give up on the story idea that you have, because out of the 8 billion people on this planet, you were given that story idea, and nobody else can write it like you can write it. Or if it's a song or a painting or a drawing, any kind of art, never give up on your ideas, whether it takes you 10 years or 20 years to make it what you want it to be. Nobody else on the planet can do what you can do with that idea. I always tell people that it's very important to embrace whatever direction those characters take you in. And definitely, I'm always open to offering advice or motivation or encouragement. I do have a contact page on my website or any of my social media. I definitely welcome people who have questions to reach out to me, because I was that person, and I still am that person very often. I'll ask my more experienced author friends questions all the time.
And where can folks go to learn more about what you're doing and that contact page, your personal website?
Yes, yeah, it's just DamienMatthews.com, and that is Matthews with one T, just DamienMatthews.com. And I'm on pretty much every social media platform, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, all the fun things the kids do, you know.
Well, wonderful. Well, I will have links to where you can find more about what Damien is up to after the show airs today on the Mountain Song and Story blog page at listenradiobristol.org. So if you didn't catch all that, you can visit the page and find all of that info. Damien, thank you so much for being here today. This has been a really fun conversation, and I already want to have you back next year on October to talk more about some of those folklore stories that we mentioned throughout this conversation, because I feel like I can just rapid fire any folk tale and you're going to tell me about it. And we got to do that next year.
Hey, I'm up for it. I'm always welcome or always willing to come on. And thank you so much for having me. This has been awesome.
I know there's never been a man in the awful shape I'm in. I can't even spell my name. My head's in such a spin. Today I tried to eat a steak with a big old tablespoon. You got me chasing rabbits, walking on my hands and howling at the moon. Well, sugar, I took one look at you and it almost drove me mad. And then I even went and lost what little sense I had. Now I can't tell the day from night, I'm crazy as a loon. You got me chasing rabbits, pulling out my hair and howling at the moon. To go out on a hunting spree, cause there ain't a hound dog in this state that can hold a light to me. I eat three bones for dinner today, then tried to tree a coon. You got me chasing rabbits, scratching fleas, and howling at the moon. And a gas pump weeded past. I pulled him up and I hollered whoa and said fill him up with gas. The man picked up a monkey wrench and wham, he changed my tune. You got me chasing rabbits, spitting out teeth and howling at the moon. I never thought in this old world a fool could fall so hard. But honey, baby, when I fell, the whole world must have jarred. I think I'd quit my doggish ways if you'd take me for your groom. You got me chasing rabbits, picking out rings, and howling at the moon.
All right, folks, thank you so much for tuning in. Remember, you can catch this program, Mountain Song and Story, every Thursday at 4 o'clock, right here each and every week on Radio Bristol. You can also check out past shows if you visit the Mountain Song and Story program blog page on over at listenradiobristol.org. As always, I'll have all of the materials and today's show playlist posted after the show today. So go check out the blog post if you want to learn more about any and everything we talked about on today's program. Special thanks again to my guest, Damien Matthews, for taking the time to speak with me for today's show. It was another really fun conversation kicking off my favorite time of the year. It's October. Halloween is right around the corner. We're going to be doing fun Halloween-focused shows all this month. Folks, once again, my name is Toni Doman. Thank you so much for tuning in. Again, all this month, I'll be airing ghostly Halloween stories, including a collection of local tales by none other than the birthplace of country music, staff, and friends. So tune in next week and all this month to hear some of those great stories. I've got to get going, but I'm going to leave you with one more song. And I will catch you right here next week. Here's Your Boogeyman by KC and the Sunshine Band.
I'm your food.